Blog Talk Radio.
And now it's time to play out loud. It's the Tony Wayne Show.
Edition of the Tony Lane Show. It is a truly fabulous Tony Lane, along with Maris, as we welcome you to episode 350, the Tony Lane Show, on a day before the eclipse.
We're all going to die.
Well, we would just be blind.
Yes, that's true.
If you look at it, if you stare at it. I remember on the late Adam West Batman show where Robin was looking up at, I guess it was an eclipse or whatever the hell it was, through a telescope. And, of course, Adam West had to tell him, don't stare directly into it because it will cause severe damage to your eyes or something like that.
Yeah.
He was full of the safety tips that... Adam West Batman.
That Mr. Batman person.
really?
The nice Batman.
Right. It was not not much of a Dark Knight, but definitely...
No.
He was more like your square guidance counselor or something.
He was more like your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
But at least Spider-Man's cool. Like,
well that's true.
He was kind of cool in a nerdy kind of way.
I mean, first off, it's Batman, and Batman itself is pretty cool. Yeah, the show's campy and everything, but it's still, like, it's still cool to watch. You're seeing, like, an early version of Batman. You're watching, like, Batman history, and it's like, that's a big chunk of it, that show. So you can't, like, not actually appreciate it.
And, we get the swan song of Adam West in the role of Batman coming up in the Batman versus Two-Face animated feature that'll be hitting the digital and Blu-ray and DVD this fall with William Shatner as Two-Face. So that should be interesting. And of course, Burt Ward, Julie Newmar, the last two surviving members of the original 60s Batman cast and
crazy,
the recently departed Adam West will be the three stars, main voice stars of that upcoming film. I can't wait, though, because I really enjoyed it last year, the first one they did.
Well, I've noticed that over the years, like some of those animated, like the straight to movie, VHS, DVD, Blu-ray, all those like Batman animated movies have actually been pretty damn good.
They just put the new Batman and Harlequin movie out this week. It's on digital.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't put the physical
copies out yet.
But I think that comes out in like 2 weeks. But the digital version is out. I have already purchased. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. But I was going to watch it this weekend, but one thing led to another, and I ended up not watching it. But I will watch it. At least I own it, so I can watch it whenever the hell I want. I just haven't gotten around to watching it yet.
You'll get to it.
And this one, Bruce Timm and all those guys were involved, and it actually even has the same animation style that the Batman the Animated Series had. And
that was such a good series.
So it's really like a continuation of that. So that's pretty cool, especially if you were a fan of that series, as we know all of us were.
Well, that was one of those cartoon series, because obviously we were both in school, so we were of the age of watching that when that debuted and came out and aired. And it was like, that was one of the shows that you rushed to get home for. Like, if you got detention, you were pissed.
Now, when it came out, you were probably, like, in middle school, or I was in high school when it came out.
Yeah, I was around middle school. But still, it was like, it was one of those cool things. It's like, it's Batman and it's good.
Right. And it was a big departure from the Batman animated series that we had gotten prior. You know, the two Filmation series. And then, of course, the Super Friends, which, you know, I grew up on Super Friends.
Hated Super Friends. Hated Super Friends.
Oh, I loved Super Friends. And that was one of the shows that I went and collected all of the DVDs. And I think I have almost the entire series. I think I may be missing two seasons. But they're very short, like 8-episode seasons, I think, that I'm missing. And you know, I might just get. I see they're on Amazon. I can just pick them up like digitally, or get the physical copy or whatever, and just call it a day. But I have most of the show. I would say I probably have 90% of the episodes.
Nice. I could never get into it. Although I was a fan more of like the Legion of Doom, but mainly for Brack, because I was a Space Ghost fan.
Legion of Doom in the Challenge of the Super Friends, that was very good. I mean, you never really saw that at the time on an animated show, where you had not only the big superhero team up, but you also had the supervillain team up.
I thought it was, like, I liked that. Like, I liked that storyline, but, like, everything else, like, that's the only time I was into it. Like,
that's
really
the first
into
one they
it.
Put out. Like, way back, I can't even remember when. It had to be over, like, 14 years ago when they put the first Super Friends DVD out.
You know what it is, though? I think, like, for me, like, I'm not a huge DC fan. There's certain DC characters that I really do enjoy. But, like, you know, with the dynamic of having, like, the Legion of Doom thrown in there, and, like, you've got really cool characters on both sides, it just made it a different dynamic. So even if you weren't a fan, you wanted to see what happened. It's like you got sucked in.
And they had a lot of really cool episodes there, if you recall that season. You know, there was the one episode where they change the origins of the three most powerful Super Friends. And it was funny because they're not supposed to know their secret identities, yet somehow they knew their origins and were able to alter their origins so they never became Super Friends. And the three powerful most powerful heroes were, of course, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
And they somehow didn't know who Superman was, but they knew he came from Krypton and was somehow able to make the ship not come to Earth or some shit. I don't remember the whole episode. And they knew Hal Jordan was the Green Lantern and was the test pilot, and they got him out of the ship so that Abin Sur, when he selected him to be his successor, he wasn't in the spot. Somebody else was. And the same thing with Diana when she was competing against the other Amazons to become Wonder Woman. And it was like, you know, I didn't think about it as a kid, but when you look at it as an adult, you're like,
how the hell did they know that?
Right.
Yeah.
So
who's leaking information to them?
Exactly. And then when the episode's over, none of them know the their secret identities. Like, all of a sudden, it's a mystery. They knew it, you know, in that episode. So they didn't think about details like that much when they were writing the stories. That wasn't the case, though, with Batman the Animated Series. Very good writing there. So if you do get a chance to pick up Batman and Harlequin, I would pick it up. It's currently out on digital HD, and it'll be out on Blu-ray and DVD, I think, either this week or next week. So, of course, we want to remind everyone to log on to TonyLaneShow.com, BlogTalkRadio.com.
BlogTalkRadio.com/TonyLaneShow.
Yes, that's the address. Fleet.
You're all hyped up. It's SummerSlam, so, you know, it's the SummerSlam hype. It's one of the big four. It's one of the big ones.
And, of course, subscribe to the show on iTunes and on Google Play. And as Maris has mentioned, it is SummerSlam weekend, and we are well into SummerSlam. Last night was NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3, another really phenomenal show from WWE's third brand there, NXT. I mean, I don't think they've ever had a bad takeover.
Like, no, I don't think they have either.
They're just like really, really good shows. Two new champions coming out of there, and then a whole shitload of new champions coming out of SummerSlam. We got the two world title matches still to be decided in SummerSlam, but pending how those two matches end up so far this weekend with all three brands and every WWE championship that's been on the line over the weekend, the only two people to retain their titles so far is Asuka and AJ Styles.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what happens in the two world title matches. And, you know, as we get results from them. But NXT TakeOver was awesome. Started off with a really strong match with Andrade Cien Almas teaming up with Zelina Vega, who is Thea Trinidad, basically, the former Rosita from TNA and fiance of Austin Aries, and she pretty much is what Cien almost needed, I think. I think it's breathing new life into his character.
Mm-hmm.
And a very entertaining match, though, him and Johnny Gargano, of course, formerly of DIY, because of Ciampa's injury. They haven't really gone too far with the storyline of him being betrayed by his DIY tag team partner yet, but very good match between him and Almas, and Almas gets the victory because Zelina Vega throws a DIY t-shirt at Johnny Gargano and distracts Johnny wrestling just enough for Almas to the victory there, but it was a very entertaining match, actually one of the better matches of the night. Everything was good, but this was one of the better matches of the night. Then on to the NXT Tag Team Championship, and I would assume Sanity is going to defend the belts in the Freebird rule, New Day rule, where any of the two of the three male members of Sanity could defend the titles. Sanity won the titles, brand new tag team champion. This was the first championship to change hands over the weekend, defeating the Authors of Pain. It was actually Alexander Wolfe and Eric Young who won the titles, even though Killian Dane was the original one advertised to be in the match. But I guess they're going to do the whole Freebird rule thing. And, of course, the female member of Sanity, Nikki Cross, was present and did get involved. But I guess she can't get in the whole mix and be a champion, I guess. But
I guess so.
Still pretty good match, but my only problem with that match was with the Authors of Pain. I mean, they've spent the past year and a half building the Authors of Pain up as monster heels, having them go over, you know, very popular babyface tag teams like DIY or, you know, TM61 or even the Revival, even though the Revival were heels, but they were still very liked and much smaller than the Authors of Pain. So for the Authors of Pain to be somewhat playing the babyfaces in this match against Sanity, it was kind of hard to feel sorry for them when they've been the big bullies for the past year and a half. You know, so I really didn't buy into them as faces. And I don't think that Brooklyn crowd did either, because they actually cheered Sanity when Sanity beat them.
Most likely. Brooklyn's a tough crowd, though.
Yeah, but I mean, I just can't see them as babyfaces, really.
No. Yeah, I'm not so sure. I don't know. You never know, though. They may do something, or I don't know, they may change and it may fit. You never know. You never know with these people.
Now, the crowd really popped at the end after Sanity won the titles when Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly came and interrupted the new champions and attacked them, and the crowd went nuts as the members of Red Dragon, the former ROH Tag Team Champions, former New Japan Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, or whatever the hell the belts were, now making their presence felt. I mean, they debuted a couple of weeks ago on NXT TV in singles matches, but now you see Fish and O'Reilly together. They didn't use the Red Dragon name, but everybody knows who they are.
Right.
It was just kind of, you know, the crowd really popped big time for them attacking Sanity. And, of course, this would not be the only time that we see Red Dragon, because we would see them later on in the night. The next match, very physical match. They brought JR out to do commentary here. Aleister Black and Hideo Itami, two really tough strikers here, and Aleister Black gets the victory with that black mask spinning heel kick, which just looked brutal. I mean, this to me, Aleister Black is money. Out of all of the guys that I see on the rosters on all three brands, the one that I think could potentially be a big time star is Aleister Black. It's
I think
something
so.
About this guy.
He's got the charisma.
Right, it's something about him. And then the matches, they're very good, very physical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he could stay healthy, and I mean, that match that him and Kenta had was really physical. I mean, and the fact that his nose got busted open, and I'm sure that was an accident. But it made it look more authentic when they're kicking the shit out of each other like that, that somebody was going to bleed.
Mm-hmm.
And Aleister Black gets the win, though. I expected a lot of good things from him if he's played right. So, but that's the thing. Some of these guys, we know they do great in NXT, and then they pull them up to the main roster, and they just fucking shit all over. So you kind of don't want some of these guys to go to the main roster. It's kinda
no,
crazy.
I know. It's terrible because you're like, you know, you watch NXT, and you're like, oh, it'd be great to see them on the big stage and blah, blah, blah. And then you think about it, and it's like, if they transfer to the main roster, it's like, they may have a chance, and they may not. That could be the last time you're seeing them type
right.
thing. It's like, so you can't really trust the main roster. It's like, good for them, but not good for the viewer, I guess, or the fans.
Right. Especially the hardcore fans. Because NXT is that brand that does more cater to the hardcore fan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look at it, it kind of reminds me of the old school Jim Crockett, NWA, or old school UWF or World Class. You know, it's like real wrestling that you can really get into and invest in the characters. There's not a lot of crazy storylines. Like,
right.
It's easy to follow. Everybody's fighting because they want to be the champion, they want to be the best or whatever. There's none of that stupid storylines that you get on the main roster a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it really connects. But then some of these guys, when you pull them up to the main roster, they don't put them over the same way.
No, they don't. Or they just aren't made for it. I mean, you know, there's people that, you know, their character may be good, but, and maybe they are comfortable or decent in NXT, and then you bring them to the main roster, and either they, you know, end up not actually being too good on the mic, or, you know, it's, sometimes it doesn't work out.
Well, I think if anything would be a potential downfall with Aleister Black, it probably would be him on the mic. I've never even heard the man talk yet. But just the whole, like, he seems like a star, though. Like, you know, and they had the live band playing in, you know, his entrance theme as he came in. And it just... he seemed big time, and the match delivered. So, from a wrestling fan standpoint, I was impressed. Whether that would impress, you know, some of the casual fans that watch WWE, the regular, you know, Raw and SmackDown, that remains to be seen. From there, we had the NXT Women's Championship. As I mentioned, one of the two people who so far did retain their title as Asuka defeated Ember Moon. Fantastic match here. We know 2 years ago, the first time they did an NXT TakeOver in Brooklyn, the first time that, as far as I've been watching wrestling 3 decades, and 2 years ago was the first time that we ever almost unanimously nominated a women's match as the match of the year with Sasha Banks and Bayley. This year, they didn't disappoint. Asuka and Ember Moon had a hell of a match. I don't think it was quite match of the year, but it was a really good match. And, of course, most people thought Ember Moon was going to win and that Ember Moon was going to be the one to end the streak. And now they're making a really big deal out of this streak. You know, she's been undefeated since she's come to NXT. She's the undefeated champion. Nobody can beat her. She now has the longest reigning WWE champion of any type, regardless of the brand or male or female title. She's the longest reigning champion of the modern era, I would say, since WrestleMania started. She's the longest reigning champion now, well over 500 days as the undefeated, undisputed women's champion. So it's like a streak that just keeps going.
Yeah.
Now, she's in number 7 now. She passed Rockin' Robin, who was the 7th longest reigning champion in the history of WWE. And now Asuka surpassed her. I think she'll never beat. I think Pedro Morales is next, and he held the title for like 1,000 days or something. She'll never hit that, but
no.
This is pretty damn impressive.
That is. It definitely is. I mean, although you never know, they'll probably take her up to the main roster before they let her break 1,000 days.
Now, she's one that I think they would fuck up on the main roster.
I think they would, too. I really do think they, and I hate to say that, but I mean, we talk about it all the time. It's like, you know, you want to see them succeed, but the writers on the main roster sometimes are not so great.
Right. And is she really the type that Vinnie Mac would put over? And he tends to usually put over the more attractive girls on the main roster. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Except for my girl, Emma. I guess he doesn't like Australians or something.
I guess not.
But most of the girls who win the belt tend to be pretty good looking.
Yes.
And it's kind of, not that Asuka's not attractive, but I mean, she, I guess, with the colorful hair and all that, I guess she wouldn't be your typical.
His type.
Right, exactly. I mean, you got to remember, Maryse was champion a long time, and she can't really wrestle.
Yes.
She's very pretty, but she can't wrestle.
I mean, how many of those have we run into over the years?
So I don't think they would put Asuka over like that, but I love that they have her as this undefeated champion. Ember Moon really was pushed very well and really was a convincing challenger. Really good match by both women, and I think when she hit the eclipse and Asuka kicked out, it was like some crazy shit. The whole fucking crowd went nuts. And, you know, even though Asuka was the heel, the fans were cheering for her still, which was another thing. Like, the fans were really cheering her big time. And then when she ended up getting the submission with the Asuka lock and retained the title, which was unexpected for me because I thought they were going to really let Ember Moon win the belt. But the fans were happy, and she's still undefeated, still the undisputed champion, Asuka, there. Now I would wonder, is whomever the winner of the upcoming Mae Young Classic, is that going to be the anointed one? Is that going to be the person that derails Asuka finally and wins this championship?
I have a little, and I don't know if you know this. I'm trying to remember the girl's name. But one of the girls that's in the Mae Young Classic is buddy-buddy with Ronda Rousey. And we know WWE wants Ronda Rousey. Queen of Spades? Yeah, Queen of Spades is her name, is what she goes by. So, I think, you know, or, you know, I'm pretty sure what's going to happen is that she'll most likely get a prominent spot or win, and then they have a reason to bring in Ronda Rousey.
And let Rousey be the one to beat Asuka?
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the Mae Young girl, or the Mae Young Classic, I'm sure they're going to bring that girl in, but you know they want Ronda Rousey in too.
They do.
So I would expect if Queen of Spades gets in, Ronda Rousey will be there soon, and then you've got two people that Ronda Rousey, I'm sure they definitely would put against Asuka.
Whoever they get to beat her, I think they have to beat her fair and square. Like, we don't want shenanigans. Like, when Goldberg's streak finally ended and it was all that chicanery that went on with the cattle prod and all that stupid shit for Kevin Nash to beat him, it kind of took away from him, and I don't think Goldberg ever truly recovered, at least in WCW, from that. I think it would have been better if they let somebody beat him fair. Would have actually worked better than to pull that shenanigans that they pulled. But I guess that's why WCW went out of business.
That's true. I mean, they pulled a lot of shenanigans, though.
So then it was on. Now those matches were really strong. We went on to the main event. Good match once again, but I actually liked some of the undercard matches better than the main event. Like I said, none of the matches were bad. It's just maybe Asuka and Ember Moon should have went last.
Probably.
Because the crowd was really hot for that.
And then usually when that happens, you get the situation where they're burnt out for the next match or the next couple matches, and that's not exactly a good spot.
Right. I mean, they were into the entrances, and they loved the end, of course. But they were kind of quiet during most of the match. But it, still, like I said, it was a very good match. Bobby Roode went in as defending NXT champion against Drew McIntyre. Really good, strong match there by both guys, of course. Drew McIntyre hits that Claymore kick at the end, defeats Bobby Roode, becomes brand new NXT champion, which, I mean, how awesome is that, that McIntyre and Jinder Mahal were both in arguably one of the worst gimmicks of all time a few years ago with 3MB, along with Heath Slater.
Yep.
Those two got released. Now both of them are back in the company. Jinder Mahal is a WWE champion, and Drew McIntyre now is your NXT champion. That's really good. Both these guys really show that you can come back from, you know, the terrible gimmicks that WWE can saddle you with at times and come back and actually have a good career. I mean, but Drew McIntyre busted his ass on the indie scene and
he did
TNA and really earned himself his spot back into NXT, and now he is the NXT champion. But of course, once he wins the title and he's celebrating his victory, then we see the return of Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, who we had seen earlier when Sanity won their belts, and they start beating up the new champion. And then out of the crowd, and they pop big time, everybody knew he was coming, former ROH champion Adam Cole, baby. He comes out. Adam Cole now joins up with Red Dragon. They jump Drew McIntyre, and they are together at the end. The Brooklyn crowd is going nuts, and it's kind of like a Ring of Honor invasion, as now you have Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly, what seems to be like a former ROH faction of sorts, and looks like they have certainly declared war against NXT, which is really cool.
That is cool.
And they can play it right. You know, unlike that ill-fated WCW invasion that happened, you know, a while ago, where half of the main eventers couldn't come over because they were on guaranteed contracts and they didn't want to lose that good money. Who could blame them?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't blame them. I wouldn't do it either.
Right. If you can get a guaranteed contract for, you know, a couple million bucks and you just got to sit on your ass and collect a check, why not?
Yeah.
You know? Rather than take less money to actually have to work for less money, like, yeah, it really didn't make much sense. So, you know, you didn't get the invasion that you wanted because all the big stars, most of them sat out. So you got a bunch of mid-card guys. A couple of guys did take the WWE offer, but not enough to really make it truly meaningful. But here, you've got a guy who was the world champion earlier this year, Adam Cole. Whenever you say Adam Cole, I guess you got to say Adam Cole Bay Bay, because that's how he always says it. But Adam Cole was your ROH champion earlier in the year.
Yes, he was.
Red Dragon, they've been, you know, like the tag team champions in ROH. They've been champions in New Japan. I think O'Reilly also held the TV title. No, he held the ROH championship. Matter of fact, he beat Adam Cole for the ROH championship, and then Cole beat him back. But I guess now they're allies. Bobby Fish was a TV champion. But it was cool to have them all together there, beating the shit out of Drew McIntyre. So that was cool. So they are back. So NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, once again, NXT does not fail to entertain. They always hit it out of the park with these takeovers. It doesn't matter who they have, which is what's so crazy about it, that a lot of times, you know, the main roster raids their talent pool, and they just reload, pick up a lot of new guys, either, you know, people that are finally getting on TV from the Performance Center, or, you know, now they're getting all these indie guys and Ring of Honor and international people, you know, either from the UK or the people they've gotten from New Japan, and they're still just hitting it out of the park every time.
Yeah.
Triple H runs a good wrestling show.
He does. But you know what? He's been in the business for how long?
Yeah, and he's a fan of the same shows that I was a fan of. And that's what he said. He tries to make it like the old Jim Crockett Promotions and the things that, you know, I grew up watching.
Those really were the best, though.
Right.
Like, you can't beat that old stuff. It's just, it's perfect. It really is. It's like, everybody should watch the old stuff. Because, like, this newer stuff is like, eh.
It can be, certainly.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the matches are a little more exciting, but, like, I don't know, I feel like the storyline back in the day, like, the character build-up, the whole nine, like, you got into it. It was much better.
Right. And me, I was a bigger fan of that, where they were doing their thing and telling the story in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know we got away from that a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially in the Attitude Era, it became more storyline driven, and some of the storylines were really funny and entertaining, but at the same time, it was taken away from the in-ring product.
Right.
You know, and to some people, I know that's the highest in terms of TV ratings, in terms of box office, and that's the best wrestling ever did, but...
Well, that's the best monetarily it ever did, but I don't think it's... Let's face it, it was a huge era for pro wrestling, but it's like, I don't think it was necessarily the best stuff.
Not from an in-ring standpoint, no.
No, like, there's stuff that's much better than that, but entertaining, yes, it was entertaining.
Yeah, highly entertaining, but not necessarily the best wrestling, and then also, you know, you were getting the ECW effect where
they were being gory just to be gory,
right,
and be bloody and stuff, and it's like, that's not how it's supposed to be.
Or high spot driven matches where, you know, like the TLC match, which were great matches, very entertaining, but I mean, they shortened guys' careers, and
yes,
really, you know, like I said, both Edge and Christian are both out of the business because of concussions and neck problems and whatever. And I'm sure those TLC matches didn't do any favors to either one of them.
No, that launched them into the retirement early.
Right. I mean, as entertaining as they were, they really took their toll on their bodies. And, you know, we talked about how Matt's knee and, you know, you see how Matt walks with a limp now and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And all this, obviously, those type of matches took its toll on these guys' body. Whereas, you know, you look back at like, as we were getting into SummerSlam weekend, some people were, you know, doing the usual SummerSlam things. You know, this is the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, so some people get, you know, somewhat nostalgic, and, you know, what was your favorite SummerSlam match of all time? When I thought SummerSlam, very first match that came to my mind was Curt Hennig and Bret Hart, Intercontinental title. I mean, that was a great match. Old school.
That is old school.
And when you see some shit like that, and how brilliant Bret Hart was, and Curt Hennig, I mean, you know, he was Mr. Perfect for a reason, because he was really great, and the two of them together just put on a fantastic match. No ladders, none of that shit. They just put on a good damn match that's still remembered all these years later. I mean, to me, that's still one of the best finishes ever, where, you know, Mr. Perfect is stomping on Bret Hart's midsection, and then he like, leg drops him while he's on the ground, and Bret catches his leg and turns it into the sharpshooter from the ground. That shit was awesome, and it looked real, like a real reversal, like that a fighter would do, you know what I mean?
That's true, it did. I mean, but they're both very capable wrestlers, and I mean, they're also some of the best.
Right.
So, I mean, they put on an awesome show. That is one that's, like, historic.
And Natty, of course, paying homage to her uncle Bret, winning the SmackDown Women's Championship with the sharpshooter, the same move Bret used to win that Intercontinental title many, many years ago. One of many championships that changed hands.
Yes.
Now, we started off with, it was damn near an empty arena match.
It was. I didn't like this match.
I mean, but what the fuck were they thinking? I mean, why didn't they let the people in earlier? Like, when they went on the air, and I started watching right when the pre-show started.
At 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm.
And at 5 o'clock, all the fucking people were outside. The ring was the arena was totally empty. And if they knew the first match was going to start at 5:30, why the fuck would you not let anybody in until 5 o'clock? Like, it didn't even make sense.
I have no idea. But, yeah, it was like a few hundred people out of a few thousand seats. Yeah, it was like, it's like, why would you do that? Like, don't you want, when the camera shows, like, your seat should be filled? Like, you know, you want to make it look and feel like an exciting event.
And for the level of performer that you had in that opener, they deserve better than to be fighting in front of an empty
100%.
Arena. I mean, I can see if, you know, like UFC, they do those pay-per-views, long-ass events, and when they're on the app, the Fight Pass, or whatever the hell it's called, the arena's probably halfway empty then, or more than halfway.
It is, but that's the same
but
with boxing, too. Yes.
It's guys just coming up. This is their first chance of exposure, and they're on the undercard, and this is where they belong.
Right.
You don't have names like, you know,
The Miz?
Hardy Boys, right.
Yeah, the Hardy Boys.
Champion, The Miz, and you know, we just talked about his father, Mr. Perfect, Curtis Axel, and Bo Dallas, and then so-called Kurt Angle's son. Still so laughable. Jason Jordan. But yeah. I mean, at least five of the people deserve better than that. And Marie even deserved better than that.
Yes, that's true.
And so I thought that was kind of fucked up. But the heels win. Miz pins Jordan. And they win. But in front of an empty arena, that's just kind of fucked up.
And it could have been planned. Because, I mean, it wasn't really a strong match for the Hardy Boys.
Right.
So, you know, maybe you don't want a lot of people to see that in person. You just want to kind of quietly do it and get it done and, you know, forget about it. You know, sweep it under the rug a little bit.
Why book it then?
To fill time? They make these super long shows, and then they got to make all these little fill matches and shit like that to, like, fill the time. Like, you know, like we always say, Raw's too long.
Right.
So they end up, you know, like at one point you're just watching filler shit.
Right.
Just to fill up time. This to me feels like it was a filler thing. They wanted to try to get people to maybe sign in early to the app, but.
Well, the pre-show, they stream that on YouTube as well.
Well, that's true.
So you don't even have to pay to see that. So
that's
it really was
true.
No, there was no reason for it.
Well, still though, it is easier to watch it on the app because then it just goes right to the live event.
The live event, right?
So
without
having
to change apps or anything.
Right. So I mean, I'm sure they try. You know, it's maybe it's a silent way of trying to get people to watch it on the app.
Now, from there, we had the Cruiserweight Championship match, a rematch from Monday Night Raw. We knew there must have been a reason why they, for no apparent reason, pulled the trigger last week on Raw and let Akira Tozawa defeat Neville and become the Cruiserweight Champion.
Mm.
And I guess it was so Neville could win the belt back.
I guess so. It does make sense.
You know, I mean, they used to do that in NWA. That's why Ronnie Garvin won the title and all of us scratched our head as kids collectively, like, what the fuck did Ronnie Garvin win the belt for? But now we know Ronnie Garvin won the belt so Ric Flair can win it back. That's
absolutely
the only reason why he won it.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted Ric Flair to win the belt at Starrcade. Ric Flair was already the champion, so he had to lose it. So
yep.
he lost it to Ronnie Garvin so he could win it back at Starrcade. Simple as that.
And Garvin got his little time in the spotlight.
Yeah. Even though it really pissed us off. I mean, I remember watching it thinking, what the fuck? Ronnie Garvin.
Yeah, that is... I mean, we've seen that a couple times, unfortunately, where you're like, what in the hell?
And it but was that... so funny, because I had talked with a guy a few years back that, you know, buddy of mine, and he watched wrestling as a kid, too. We're, you know, around the same age.
Mm-hmm.
And he remembered that episode of Worldwide also, where the whole show was just Ronnie Garvin and Ric Flair. That's the only match they showed.
Yeah.
And it was so odd because, A, back then, Ric Flair almost never wrestled on TV.
Right.
He never saw Hogan on TV.
Right.
Except on Saturday Night's main event.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ronnie Garvin not only wrestles him on TV, but he wins the fucking belt on top of that. And we were all, like, in shock. Like, what the fuck? Ronnie Garvin? It was just crazy. But it was so funny, though, when I talked with him and his reaction was the same way. Because our reaction, my brother and I, we had the exact same reaction. And we still remember it to this day. Like, it was just some crazy shit.
Well, that is, when stuff like that happens, that is kind of crazy.
And, of course.
Because it's fishy. You're just like, what?
Right. And of course, speaking of Ric Flair, we do want to give him wish him well while he is still in the hospital. They said he's coma now.
I think they said they just released him.
No, from what I heard, he actually is still in the hospital, but he's there's still some complications from what I heard, but he's no longer in the coma. And they said he's talking and. He could be in the hospital for a while, from what I hear.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the... I read Charlotte's post wrong.
Yeah, but he is doing better. Which
yes,
is good.
He is doing better.
So, Neville beats Akira Tozawa, regains the Cruiserweight Championship with a... beautiful red arrow. And then from there, the SmackDown Tag Team Championship continues the string of championships that changed hands. And this was a great match, but the Usos and New Day.
Mm.
It was one of the better matches all night, actually.
So far, yes.
And
well.
I guess these guys were like, you know, we're on the fucking pre-show. Neither one were really in a match in WrestleMania. Because remember, New Day were the hosts. And the Usos didn't even get a match because at the time they were feuding with American Alpha. And the SmackDown Tag Team titles weren't even... That was the only belt that wasn't defended at WrestleMania, if you recall.
Yes.
And so... they said, you know, we weren't on WrestleMania. We're on the second biggest show of the year on the pre-show. But they fucking did their thing. Both teams performed so well. Really, really strong match. In the end, the Usos defeated New Day and won the tag team championship now for the fourth time. Becoming one of only, I think, five teams in WWE history to be four-time tag team champions? The only other ones would be Edge and Christian, the Dudleys, the Hardys, and the New Age Outlaws.
Yes.
So very good company there. The Usos now four-time tag team champions. Great match.
It was.
Then the official show starts, and right off the bat, John Cena opening up the show, like, what the fuck? John Cena starts off against Baron Corbin. He gets the victory. How did Baron Corbin go from being Mr. Money in the Bank to opening the pay-per-view and losing to John Cena and just a few days after unsuccessfully cashing in the Money in the Bank?
I was thinking the same thing. Like, I didn't realize that match was going to be on so early, because normally you don't really see Cena that early in a pay-per-view.
Right.
So, because he's, you know, their cash cow. And even though he is on a part-time schedule, it's like, it's a little weird. Again, it's like one of those matches where it's like, it's fishy. And it's like, what exactly is going on here? But it's like, we'll see what they do with Corbin. I think his push is over. Or I think they're gonna shove him, you know, down a little and keep him in the backlogs.
He must have pissed somebody off.
Oh, he had to have.
Because he seemed like he was the guy that they picked to really be the top heel on SmackDown. And now, mm-hmm. I guess Jinder Mahal is doing better than they thought, and they're sticking with him, and Corbin may have ruffled some feathers the wrong way. I don't know.
I don't know either, but something is afoot.
Exactly. So, and see how quickly his fortunes changed as well.
Yes.
So that didn't take long to get into the proverbial doghouse. But John Cena does get the victory. Attitude adjustment, no surprise there. Then, as I mentioned previously, Natalya uses the sharpshooter to defeat Naomi and become the new SmackDown Women's Champion.
Mm-hmm.
This match was a big waste of time. Big Cass and Big Show and the Shark Tank. I did like, however, during the pre-show, how Renee Young asked Carmella about that match, like just randomly asking her if she had a vested interest in the match. And of course, you know, her and Big Cass are a couple in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the fact that he made that little in joke was kind of funny. Carmella was looking pretty damn good tonight, I must say myself.
Oh, was she now?
She was.
What do you think?
Big Cass is a lucky guy.
I'd say so.
And so he wins convincingly over Big Show. Enzo gets out of the shark cage.
I hate to be like this, but like greasing himself up and like fake flipping through the bars that were clearly large enough to fit his little skinny ass through.
Right.
It's like, I mean, the effect was cool when it was the hard camera, but when you're seeing it from the side, it's like you can see that he can fit through those.
That it was definitely, yeah, a gimmicked cage so that he could get through.
Yeah.
But I mean, and he's another one that a lot of people say he's like very polarizing backstage. And is not one of the favorites amongst the boys. Could be his fucking mouth. I mean, he talks a lot.
He does.
You know, the fans like him, but what do you do with him other than make him a manager?
That's true. They could.
You know, and the fact that they don't use managers too much. Now, I mean, Titus. I think Titus O'Neil is funny as hell with this whole, you know, the Titus brand is Titus Worldwide, but Titus is so goddamn big, it's kind of hard to take him as a serious manager because he's, like, bigger than the guys he's managed.
That's true.
You know, but it's just, especially a character Zal, who's a cruiserweight. You see this big, giant.
Of a man. He's huge.
Right. That's the manager. It's kind of crazy. So, I don't know. I don't know. What do you do with Enzo and Mora?
Did you see the new... I know this is a little off subject, but speaking of Enzo, did you see the new KFC commercial?
Oh, yeah. The one
where they're all the colonels?
Right.
Enzo's hilarious in that one. With that stupid, like, foot shuffle he does.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Dolph Ziggler and Goldust, Becky Lynch. Bunch of colonels.
Yeah, it's good. It's bunch funny.
Yeah. And, I mean, they put out a new season of Southpaw Regional Wrestling on YouTube and well, which is their parody of the old territories.
Mm-hmm.
Does and some funny stuff. So if you like the more comedic side of WWE, those are some things to check out. But from there, we had Randy Orton and Rusev. What did Rusev do?
This was a waste.
Yeah.
This was an absolute waste. Again, this was filler. I'm convinced this was filler.
He attacks Randy Orton during the entrance, and then bell, when it finally rings, Orton catches him with a hell of an RKO. I mean, that RKO looked great.
It did.
And beats him.
Mm-hmm.
Locked in at 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's like that was like a filler. It's like, let's just go your face, go show your face. Do your thing and get the hell out.
Yeah. And then from there, the Raw Women's Championship, Sasha Banks defeats Alexa Bliss, becomes the brand new champion. She also wins by submission with the bank statement.
Mm-hmm.
Then Finn Balor comes out as the Demon to take on Bray Wyatt. Pretty decent match here. Finn Balor wins with the coup de grace. But does this do anything for Finn?
Or Bray Wyatt?
Bray Wyatt. To me, every person that Bray Wyatt's feuded with over the past year, like, it really hasn't done anything for the opponent.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really could do so much with Bray Wyatt, like so much. And they don't. They just don't. It's like so frustrating.
And we know now that Bray, or a year ago, I mean, Finn Balor was the first Universal Champion.
Mm-hmm.
And he never lost a belt.
No.
You know, he got injured and had to relinquish the title because of an injury. And he's never gotten his title match. I mean, it's like, what the fuck? When is he going to get his shot at the belt he never lost?
We'll see. Because, like, that injury, I think I remember us talking about how we were interested to see if that injury, if they decided once he came back, if they were going to push him as hard.
Right.
So,
I mean, I know the slow build, but he's over with the people.
Yes.
He's real over. And first time he brought out the Demon character since winning the Universal title last year. But we knew that was coming.
Yes.
Once they pulled out that bucket of blood or whatever the hell it was, we knew it was coming. So I'm sure all the marks just collectively shut up, I'm sure, after what we just saw.
Wow.
I
well.
love when the marks get it wrong.
That, yeah. Damn.
So,
well, okay, so.
Then from there, we had yet another championship change hands as Ambrose and Rollins, the reunited two-thirds of the former Shield, they defeated the Bar, Cesaro and Sheamus to become the brand new Raw Tag Team Champions. Pretty good match. Great ending there. And this one was kind of, everybody knew what was going to happen here because Sheamus is going to make a movie, so they had to drop the belt. And that's probably why Sheamus took the pin.
Probably, yeah.
Because he's going to be off for a while making a movie. But Ambrose and Seth Rollins, brand new tag team champions. Then, finally, someone retains a title with Shane O'Mac as the special referee. AJ Styles becomes the first person to retain a belt at SummerSlam 2017 with his victory over Kevin Owens. And after they had all those consecutive title changes, then to just all of a sudden have
no title change.
Last few, right, retain was just kind of odd. Maybe they should have mixed it up a little bit.
Yeah, probably, but you know. you know how that goes.
That's WWE for you, right?
Yes. Look at that. They're like right on time.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. For a change, right?
Yeah, that never happens.
Well, but you had the extra hour on the pay-per-view as well.
Oh, so that's true, yeah.
They weren't trying to squeeze everything into 3 hours.
Yeah.
So now, WWE Champion Jinder Mahal with the Singh Brothers retained the WWE title over Shinsuke Nakamura. I guess Nakamura is another guy we can kind of say is not doing as well on the main roster as he did in NXT.
Yeah, I can definitely say that.
The jury's still out, though, I guess.
I mean, I enjoy him, but that he's a different flavor. We'll just put it like that. He's a much different flavor.
Right, and Asuka would be a very similar flavor, I would think. And
yeah,
not just because they're both Asian. You know, I'm not saying that, but I think that she would be very similar style to Nakamura.
Yes, absolutely. They both come from the same, you know, obviously they both come from Japan. So, and that's Nakamura's style. Like, if you watch Japanese, that's what the style that Nakamura does. So
right.
It's like, it is different from ours.
Right.
So, you know, some people are really into it. Some people not so much.
Exactly.
It definitely was an experiment on WWE's, on their end. Because they had no idea how a Japanese wrestler would do on the main roster, even as big as Nakamura is.
Right. And I still think there is a chance for Nakamura to do very well on the main roster, but at least right now, he's certainly not as over as he was in NXT.
No, not at all.
All right, and then from there, we had the Fatal 4-Way Universal Championship match. Another retain here, which is what I was cracking up that the marks got it wrong once again. Brock Lesnar retains the championship over Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns, and Samoa Joe by pinning Roman Reigns, of all people.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Paul Heyman brilliantly got the marks going there. We're during a promo a couple of Monday Night Raws ago where he said that if Brock Lesnar lost the championship, and of course he could have lost the title without being pinned.
Yes.
In a fatal four-way. First person gets the pin or submission wins.
Mm-hmm.
That he would be leaving. And of course, with John Jones talking about how he wanted to fight Brock Lesnar, there was all the talk that he's leaving WWE, he's going back to UFC, and blah, 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 and all this shit. So they were,
yeah,
they swore up and down he was going to lose the belt tonight, and going back to UFC, and this, that, and the other. So I just love when they get it wrong, because, of course, we know Brock Lesnar isn't going anywhere. He's under contract until WrestleMania, at least, and we know he's not going back anytime soon. So,
well, like I said, somebody had asked that at a press conference after a pay-per-view the night that John Jones called him out, and Dana White even said that that wasn't even remotely in the scope of things at the time. He said maybe in the future, but he even said that he would have to go through a whole, like, drug cleanup program, which would take at least 6 months before it could even start to the process of getting back into the ring on UFC and stuff. So it would be time and money regardless.
Right. Right. But I love that they were able to plant that seed in the head of a lot of the marks out there.
Well, the problem is not a lot of people watch the after fight press conferences immediately after.
Right. But we knew Brock Lesnar wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, he makes too much money.
Yeah.
They're paying him big time.
Even though that could be an impressive fight with Jones and Lesnar, but you're not going to see it at least until 2018, at least.
Probably.
After WrestleMania 34, at least.
Yes.
When he's no longer under contract with WWE. So,
but then again, we'll see, because he may want to keep it up. If you think about it, like, he is, you know, getting older, and maybe he should lay off the really hard physical stuff at this point, which would mean maybe UFC's not, you know, 100% good thing for him. But wrestling is not as impactful to the body, we'll say. I mean, you're taking knocks and everything like that, but you're not getting punched in the face full force.
Right.
So
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was saying, at least you can see that they protected Braun Strowman still, where Braun Strowman wasn't the one that took the fall. He's another one that could potentially beat Lesnar and probably be the future champion.
Yeah, I can see that. And that would be believable. Like,
really
believable.
Right. And it was good seeing the two of them go at it, you know, for the time that they did go at it during this four-way match. But overall, not a bad SummerSlam. You know,
not
it was long.
The best. Yeah, it was definitely long.
It didn't feel as long as WrestleMania, though, even though it was almost as long. Not quite. WrestleMania was an extra hour, I think.
Yeah, I think WrestleMania was an extra hour. I mean, it moved along. It wasn't too terrible. They only had a couple filler spots and filler matches, so it wasn't, like, bad.
And I guess because some of it I was grilling some steaks up, so I kind of was watching it and cooking at the same time.
You eating. How dare you? How dare you eat during SummerSlam? You need to be right in front of that TV.
I know. I should have been paying more attention, right?
You should have. How dare you?
It wasn't a bad card, though. I actually enjoyed SummerSlam.
It wasn't bad. Well, I've seen worse.
Oh, absolutely. Just a bunch of title changes. Now, moving forward, the question is, where do we go from here in terms of the brand split? Are they going to do another shakeup? There was talk that after SummerSlam they were going to do another shakeup and move some people. They just did one a few months ago.
Yeah, they need to chill with that.
Yeah. To me, it doesn't help by moving the people.
Yeah, it doesn't help. And it's confusing. Because think about it. They did just do it. So, you know, you're just getting used to this person being on this one instead of this particular show. And now they change it up again, and it's like, well, now they're back on this show and not on Raw. Like, you know, they just need to chill out.
Now, they did say that the next time they do a draft or something, NXT is supposedly going to be included. And some of the people can get even moved back to NXT.
That's a good idea.
Which would help, because some people did better in NXT than they did on the main roster. And some people, you know, they have nothing for them. They just, like, What the fuck is he even doing with the Hype Bros? Not that I'm a fan of the Hype Bros, but Mojo Rawley won the Andre the Giant Battle Royal at WrestleMania. And then once Zack Ryder came back, it's like, what the fuck have they done? They haven't even been on TV lately. Like, at least in NXT, they were on TV.
That's true. They do need to thin certain people out of the main roster. It's just, it's too much. Even though it's two brands,
right,
quote unquote, or it's split, it's still just, there's too many people. That, or they really need to start pushing the lower people, because it's like, it's still the same people over and over and over. It's like, please mix it up.
Exactly. Like, do something a little different. But we shall see. Now, also, I actually looked at Impact Wrestling this week.
Oh, okay.
Which was a shock. Saw the returning Taryn Terrell. Like, we had just talked about Taryn Terrell, and she's back. The former Miss Drew McIntyre, and she interfered in the Knockout Championship match with Gail Kim and Sienna and caused Gail Kim to lose. So, I guess she's going to be back as a heel to face Gail Kim, you know, as Gail Kim gets closer to her
retirement.
Retirement, right.
Yeah.
So that should be interesting. But Taryn Terrell still looked good, though. I was, like, impressed. And then the Alberto El Patron, of course, has been stripped of the GFW Championship. Jim Cornette is back as an authority figure on screen for TNA, or Impact, or GFW, whatever the hell you want to call it. And they will have a new champion crowned next week on their TV, which they probably already filmed.
Yeah.
But I don't do spoilers, so I don't know who the champion is. And I won't read it and find out who won ahead of time.
Right. That's the only fair thing to do.
Right. Just like with this Mae Young Classic, which debuts on WWE Network next week. Most of it they already filmed, except for the finals. I have not looked at any spoilers. And this was hard to do.
I haven't either.
That tournament was filmed, the 13th and the 14th of July?
Yes.
And now we're well over a month.
Yeah.
I have stayed away from spoilers.
I every time I see the icon come up for it, I'm like, no, I'm not looking it up. I want to watch it and be surprised.
Exactly. And we're still a week away before it debuts on WWE Network. And from what I understand, it's going to debut Netflix style, where they're going to put all the episodes out at once, which I think kind of takes away from it. They should have done it where they play one episode every week, like they did with the Cruiserweight Classic, but they're putting them all out at once.
I mean, I'm not necessarily angry at that, because, like, I do like to binge watch stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I'm not mad at that setup.
So, we'll see. Now, the Bracketology special is running on WWE Network as we speak, so you can get to know some of the performers, which these are like women that I would see in the indies all the time, like Marty Bell and Kimberly and Mia Yim and all of the girls that they're showing. That's Solo Darling that's on there now. Like these are like, I almost feel like I know these girls. Because, like, you know, at the indie shows, you, like, talk to them, and you're, like, close to them. So it's kind of, like, much different than, like, when you go to a WWE show where you don't really get to get too close to the talent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I can't tell you how many indie shows. It's, like, how many of them hang out afterwards, and you can get autographs. And it's, like, that's, you know, it's fun. You go to WWE and you're hustled in and then hustled out. No mingling, no being like, hey, great job tonight. Was really into it. None of that.
Right. Well, actually, no, I stand corrected. They're going to release four episodes at a time. first four episodes will be released next week. But we're actually out of time. So thanks for listening. For Maris, I am Tony Lane. We will see you next week.
Think Out Loud, the Tony Lane Show.
What kind of world are we living in that this is considered entertainment?
TonyLaneShow.com.